Now, if I were a mean host and Iridian was a mean producer, this would be the moment before I bring our guest in where we re-rack his predictions on what would happen with the Mike Madigan trial. And then I'd bring Mike Leonard on and say, well, what do you think about that, Mike? But I'm not a mean person. Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
Hey, John. Didn't I say back in October there'd be 10 counts guilty, 7 counts not guilty, and then the jury would hang on the remaining 6 counts? Isn't that what I said?
Yeah, maybe you said that, or was it last week that you said that you were still confident that it was probably going to be fine? But hey, you know, it's a hard tea leaf to read, and you are a federal defense attorney, so I think that you just have a predilection, and maybe there's a hope springs eternal with every situation that you just want to move the needle that way a little bit.
That could be. I knew that I would not avoid your verbal spanking, though. So even if it came late in the show where maybe listeners were nodding off, you know, you're going to get your licks in.
Yeah, you got those 10 guilty counts. I mean, it wasn't a complete win for the government, but they did what they wanted to do, didn't they?
Yeah, they got him on some significant counts. I mean, it was kind of 3 buckets. He was found guilty on most of the conduct relating to ComEd, and, you know, that involved getting jobs for individuals who did no work, and in exchange, allegedly, that influenced legislation in favor of ComEd. The second bucket related to the Solis board positions, you know, getting Solis positions on state boards, or at least indicating he was going to do so. And then finally, a couple of counts relating to business deals where the allegation was that Madigan was attempting to get these individuals to hire his law firm in exchange for his efforts or Solis's efforts on their behalf. So that's where they got him. They didn't get him on the kind of more complex RICO counts, which are really involved and detailed. So they didn't get him there, but they got him on some kind of simple schemes, which I think are easy for a jury to understand.
Yeah. What does sentencing look like? I mean, I know we're going to kind of go through a similar thing with Ed Burke. I'm sure we're going to get a letter from every Tom, Dick, and Harry that he, you know, gave a high five to or helped out with. And I shouldn't be so crass about it. I'm sure there's some good thing. Because the Burke thing kind of surprised me, how many letters he got and some genuine outpouring of people saying, yeah, he may have done some of these things, but here's some of the great things he did in my community or with my family. And no doubt that Mike Madigan has supporters along those lines, too. And letters are going to come on in, aren't they?
Yeah, I would expect, you know, for purposes of what's called mitigation, you're trying to put your client in their best light possible to the judge, and you want to bring in their whole history. So when you're in the legislative body for 50 years, as he was, you know, presumably you're going to be able to have a lot of people out there that you did a favor for, that you got a job, that you helped their family. So I expect an outpouring of those types of letters. You know, Burke got a 2-year sentence. Madigan, we got to keep in mind he's 82 or 83 years old. That's a significant factor in sentencing that has to be taken into account. At the same time, you know, you could argue that Madigan's misdeeds are greater than Burke because it's on a more, you know, whole Illinois scale, right? So I think I would still expect a significant sentence from the judge to be issued, but you got to keep in mind that he is of that age. That'll be certainly be a factor.
Now, John Williams talked a lot about if someone's over 80, should that matter? And I don't know where I stand on those things. I think for like violent crimes, that shouldn't matter, especially like a taking of a life or really harming someone. For maybe white collar is probably an outdated term for this, or political corruption charges. I don't know. I don't know where I sit on that. I can imagine where you sit, Mike.
Well, people have a lot of views about that issue, but, you know, the age comes in to play in sentencing a lot, and for a variety of different reasons. One of them is, you know, is the person likely to engage in recidivist behavior? Are they likely to commit other crimes? Of course, when you're of that age and you're no longer in the job, the chance you're going to commit crimes in the future are zero, basically, right? Statistically. So that always has to be considered. And even if you have a defendant who is in their 50s or in their 60s and they're not of the acclaim of Mike Madigan, we're still making those arguments because statistics come in play and the purposes of punishment come into play. The purposes of sentencing come into play. So, yeah, some people are going to say throw the book at him. They don't care if he stays in prison past his 90s or the rest of his life. Other people are going to say, no, you know, it's not fulfilling the aims of sentencing when you give someone of that age a super long sentence.
Yeah, and this is a struggle. And there's no right or wrong answer. People, if you believe he should go to jail for the rest of his life for the crimes he committed, you know, that's, you're entitled to your opinion. I often wonder, like, what is the broader good to society done by putting someone in jail? And one could make the argument, and there's a lot of weight to it, that no, you need to sentence these politicians. We need to establish a sense of law in this country and in this state and in this city particularly about political corruption, a state and a city that have so many political corruption trials there. And I see that argument, Mike, and part of me feels that way. Throw the book. We need to start reversing this trend. Although the entire weight of corruption could almost work in the favor of the argument of it doesn't matter. These sentences don't do anything to stop what is a virus in this city and state as it pretends to corruption. I don't know. I see both sides, Mike.
Yeah, no, it brings up a lot of good issues that have been debated for a long time. You know, going back to Governor Ryan's conviction and Blagojevich's conviction, and, you know, people have said all the time that we need to send a message. We need to punish. It'll deter others. It really hasn't worked from a deterrent standpoint, but, you know, a strong argument that you just made is like promoting respect for the law, promoting the idea we don't have a two-tiered system of justice, that if you're a politician, you're somehow going to get off easy, and if you're convicted of more street crime, you're going to get a crazily long sentence. So there's all sorts of things. We could debate this one certainly all day long.
Well, right. And the politicians thing, we're going to put a pin on that for just 1 minute because we're going to go to what is happening in New York and the interesting aspects there. Someone texted in about Madigan not showing remorse like some maybe other politicians have also not. Is that a thing that the judge is going to want to look at? I mean, it's hard for you to tell a client to, like, what, admit every, like, hey, actually, yeah, you're right. I'm guilty of this stuff. I'm so sorry. That's a hard line to toe if Madigan speaks or people speaking on his behalf, this idea of acknowledging maybe some remorse without acknowledging guilt. Mike, that's hard to do, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a fine line. And so, you know, in a traditional case, particularly if you're not going to appeal, and if you want to really appeal to the judge and kind of own it, that can be a very effective strategy, you know, that basically admit your wrongdoing at sentencing. And it's dicey. You know, some people want to do that. Some people don't for purposes of appeal and other reasons, or they just don't want to admit that. But, you know, traditionally, we would like our clients to express some level of remorse to the court and how they would do things differently. It's going to be difficult for Madigan, who is, you know, seemingly unwilling to admit that these are crimes. And also, he has substantial appeals coming up. So that'll be difficult. I don't expect him to fall on a sword and say that he believes he's guilty. However, in his allocution to the court, he can say a lot of other things that fall short of being remorseful or taking the heat fully, but acknowledging some level of acceptance or responsibility. But unless he's willing to go all the way there, I don't think that's going to help him with the court.
All right, we'll wait and see. I wanted to bring you on to talk about what's happening. We've had 7 New York federal prosecutors quit, essentially, in a reaction to the Justice Department dismissing Mayor Eric Adams out of New York City, the bribery case. What is going on at SDNY?
Yeah, remarkable. You know, it's almost like attuned to Nixon or something like that. So basically, these prosecutors who have a very strong belief that the charges brought against Adams are legitimate refused to sign off on the motion to dismiss. And so they, one after another, they refused to sign and said, no, I'd rather quit than sign this motion, which I know in their minds is brought in bad faith. And the interesting thing about the motion to dismiss is that the government's admitting that they don't claim that the allegations against him aren't sufficient or couldn't be proven. Instead, they're using an excuse to the court that Adams will not be able to carry out his mission as mayor if he's under indictment or has to face these charges, which is a remarkable claim, and it's really never been made by a prosecutor's office before. And they've gone out of their way to say, no, we're not saying the charges are frivolous or couldn't be proven, but somehow Adams can't complete his mission and do what he needs to do if we go ahead with these charges, which really has never happened before.
Well, right. There's been politicians under indictment for the entire time of this government's history. No doubt that they have to go to court sometimes, and it would be a strain But a lot of people under indictment have other jobs they still have to work through. I don't know. I just don't. I don't know if I buy that argument.
Yeah, it's not much of an argument. I mean, everyone really views it as like a quid pro quo. Like Adams is going to do certain things for the administration. And the interesting thing is Adams will be kind of on a string because the motion to dismiss will be without prejudice, meaning theoretically the charges could be brought back. I don't expect them to be brought back. And or Trump could also pardon him. But Trump can kind of keep him dangling out there, making sure that he's complying with what he wants to do with the kind of the threat that, hey, if these charges could come back, we could reinstitute them. I don't have to give you a pardon. I want to see how you perform. Are you doing what I want? So that's what makes it real distasteful for people. And it also makes it distasteful that Adams went down and lobbied Trump to get this result. So it's hard for a lot of people associated with the criminal justice system to accept. And it's kind of a distasteful outcome, let's face it.
I'm not pushing back on that, Mike. I just want to offer, like, is that too cynical of are you trying to kind of, like, connect too many things together to make that case that that's really what's happening, some sort of dangling of a carrot over the mayor to do the president's bidding? I mean, there are other cases in history where prosecutors resign because of something the upper echelons of the DOJ want them to do. Is part of this just par for the course? Is this sometimes the give and take between prosecutors and the top of the DOJ? Or do you see this as so extraordinary that it does rise to the level of what you had hypothesized?
Yeah, it's definitely not par for the course. I mean, especially when the upper echelon is admitting, hey, we're not making any statement that the evidence is insufficient or that we couldn't prove our case, but we're relying upon other sort of extrajudicial things that have nothing to do with the merits of the case. You just don't see that. You don't see a prosecutor's office saying, hey, we're going to dismiss because of something unrelated to the allegations and the strength of them. This happens. You know, cases get dismissed. There's no doubt about it.
Right.
And they get dismissed on a regular basis at a low, very low percentage. However, it's typically because they don't believe in good faith that they can prove the case beyond a reasonable doubt. That's why that happens. It's not because there's a political calculus involved. That's what makes this so unique and not par for the course.
I don't know the backgrounds of all the seven prosecutors, but I have read a couple of the letters that they sent up, and they don't really... They're still respectful letters, but they're not holding their punches, Mike. I mean, some of the people are they're just saying this is a quid pro quo, and this is why I cannot execute this order. I mean, they're calling it the way they see it in these letters of resignation.
Yeah, I mean, one prosecutor said in his letter and his public statements that, you know, only a fool or a coward would sign the motion to dismiss. So that's a pretty strong statement. So, they're definitely taking the position that, hey, we don't want our office politicized. I mean, obviously, there's always an argument about what's a political prosecution and what's not. But they're clearly not willing to sign off on this and have their fingerprints on it. And, you know, the judge in the case really doesn't have any choice but to take it and dismiss the case. However, there's two things that could possibly happen. He could hold a hearing to try to figure out, you know, try to ferret out the rationale and make a record of that. And there's been some suggestion that maybe he'd have authority to appoint a special prosecutor. I don't think that's likely because then...
Oh, a judge?
Yeah, the judge. I mean, I don't think that's going to happen, but theoretically that could be a card that could be played. I don't expect it to happen, but I wouldn't be surprised if the judge wants to hold a hearing and kind of hold their feet to the fire and make them say on the record why it is that they're dismissing the case. That wouldn't surprise me, but ultimately the judge is going to really, I don't think, have any choice but to accept the dismissal. But like we said before, it's going to be without prejudice, meaning theoretically the charges could be brought back. But, you know, you got statute of limitations issues, you got a potential pardon, all that sort of stuff.
So I just want to make sure I know where we are in the order of operations. Have the charges been dismissed right now?
No, they filed a motion to dismiss.
Ah, okay.
So you basically, and that's what the New York prosecutors and D.C. prosecutors were unwilling to sign off on because they'd have to put their name to a motion that says, hey, we want to dismiss these charges. Now, that gets filed with the court, and then the court will appear in front of the judge, and the judge may have some very pointed questions to ask, or he might set it for a hearing. But ultimately, I expect that he will accept their decision to not proceed with the charges because it's not his call. It's a prosecutor's call. It's their discretion.
Some people might be listening and saying, well, you guys sound like you're in favor of political prosecutions. Mike, I think it'd be a good point to bring up that I think, I don't know if you put it quite like this, but we've argued and discussed on the show that the SDNY case against Trump, the one he was found guilty of, you've contended, I believe, or other people have, that those charges would have never come about unless his name was Trump. And you could make the argument about the Hunter Biden case, too, and you have in that extent that some of those charges would have never come if his name wasn't Biden. I think that you can still hold that those two cases shouldn't have been brought up and still not like what is happening in New York, right? These are not opposing ideas.
Yeah, I don't think, I mean, I know the argument's been made that somehow Adams has been targeted because he's the mayor. Of course, if you're more prominent, you put your neck out there, you're likely to get prosecuted. There's no question about it. And it's a much more sexy case to take for a prosecutor and makes it more likely to take. However, it seems clear that Adams was being investigated long before anything to do with Trump, anything to do with his recent election. Some of the allegations on Adams go back to when he was not mayor, when he was, you know, in a politician in one of the New York boroughs. So, and the allegations against Adams are pretty substantial. I mean, one of them relates to him taking money from a foreign country and then essentially being pressured to approve a building, a skyscraper being open in New York that hadn't been approved under the fire codes, and pressuring the New York Fire Department to let the building go forward. So the allegations are pretty significant and, you know, relate to him accepting money from foreign officials and foreign individuals. So it's not like these are ticky-tack charges that are getting dropped.
Right. And I guess what I'm saying is you can still be against political prosecutions, unnecessary ones of people of either party, and hold a firm line on that and still dislike what is happening in New York as if you don't see it that way. I just want to make sure to kind of square that up.
I think that's a good point, John.
Yeah. All right, Mike Leonard, we're out of time. You're a federal defense attorney. You do great work. How can people reach you?
312-380-6559, LeonardTrialLawyers.com. Thanks for having me on, John.
Are you on next week? I feel like I've had you on like 5 weeks in a row. I'm sorry to keep calling you.
I think I might be. You might want to drop me, and then forget about my failed predictions.
Oh, we still want you, Mike. That's Mike Leonard, federal defense attorney. That'll do it for the show.